Welcome to Florida.
That is the voice of New York Times best-selling author and award-winning environmental reporter Craig Pittman. My name is Chad Scott, and this is Welcome to Florida. FloridaPhoenix.com. Every Thursday, Craig's got a new article, and in the most recent one, you take us back 25 years. A lot of our listeners will not have been in the state that long. Many of them, you know, may not even have been alive that long, but you're recalling an event you remember very well, and I'm sure the folks who lived in Florida at that time do as well.
Oh, yeah. The 1998 wildfires. For 6 weeks, wildfires were sweeping across the state. We had thousands of firefighters here helping us try and stop it. And things got so bad that then Governor Lawton Childs actually went on TV and asked people to pray for rain, which I have never seen that happen before or since. And the reason I wrote about it is not just because the 25th anniversary of all this starting has gotten here, but also because the firefighters have learned a lot about dealing with wildfire. And one of the things they learned is the way you stop wildfires is you have prescribed burns on a regular basis. Most of the Florida landscape is dependent on wildfires. And the problem is we've been allowing developers to build in areas that need to be burned. And the new folks come in and they don't want all that smoke in their house and they complain about it. And the prescribed burns get shut down. And
if you live anywhere where there is pine trees or oak trees, that is a habitat which needs some fire every once in a while. Now, not a raging forest fire, but, you know, the typical lightning strike fires. And you know, this gets into a lot of land management issues, and it's particularly pronounced out west. But you highlight in the column how for 150 years in U.S. history, fire was the enemy. And what that allowed to happen was all these felled trees and the fuel on the forest floor would build up until you had these huge conflagrations like the fires in Yellowstone that would burn a million acres and you'd be able to see the smoke from three states away. That's obviously not healthy, but those conditions were allowed to accumulate because forest fire prevention always knocked the little fires down. A healthy forest ecosystem here in Florida has continual little fires, never the big ones like you're talking about.
Yeah. And see, and so ideally you would burn every 2 or 3 years, maybe even every 5 years. And, you know, once those prescribed burns start, then people start calling in, hey, I'm getting smoke in my yard. Hey, my kid can't breathe. Hey, can you shut that down? And so they stop the burns and it's setting things up for us to have another 1998 wildfire season.
Yeah, the sugar plantations are allowed to burn, but not the prescribed burns in national forests, which are actually healthy for the environment. FloridaPhoenix.com. You'll learn a lot about forest fire, when it's productive, when it's not in Florida. I want to remind everyone that we are like an eyelash from our 20 patron goal at patreon.com/welcometoflorida. Craig, I've already started planning the episode because one or two more patrons at patreon.com, $5 a month, is going to push us over that initial 20 patron threshold, at which point we said we'd release a special episode just to the patrons. So if you enjoy the podcast, you want to support us, you've got an extra $5 a month you can do that with. Visit patreon.com/welcometoflorida. And very soon we will have a special insider edition of Welcome to Florida, an episode of the podcast all about the behind the scenes and how it's made. Well, Craig, recently you were at the Word of the South Book Festival in Tallahassee, and that's where we go for today's episode.
Yes. Word of South Festival is this great big party that they have in Tallahassee, basically features books and music and just all kinds of great food. Diane Roberts was one of the organizers this year, and she's someone who introduced. I was there with Andy Marlette, this great cartoonist. And so they like to pair people up who don't necessarily go together. Mm-hmm. And when I was there 2 years ago, they paired me up with Del Suggs. We had him podcast after that. Talking about Florida folk music. It occurred to me, you know, we've been trying to do episodes on different Florida cities, and it occurred to me nobody knows Tallahassee as well as Diane Roberts, because she has been there, her family's been there for years and years and years, and she'd be a great one to talk about that. So that's why I invited her to come on and talk
about it. Yeah, you're right. We've had a number of interesting city episodes recently. You can go back through the archives for Jacksonville, for Pensacola, for Eatonville, numerous, obviously.
Key episodes. West.
Yep. Key West, yeah, that's a way back one. Good call there. A lot about Miami and Tampa, obviously. This one's going to focus on Tallahassee. Also in the archives, Jeff and Ann Vandermeer from Tallahassee. That was a good episode. And our Supreme Court episode, which focused on the Bush-Gore recount election, the backdrop, obviously, being Tallahassee. So Diane Roberts, she's an FSU professor of English and literature, that kind of thing. She has a book, Dream State, 8 Generations of Swamp Lawyers, Conquistadors, Confederate Daughters, and Other Florida Wildlife. You can find her on Twitter at Bad Debutante, and Diane is our guest today.
Diane, thank you so much for joining us today. Tell folks how far back your family goes in the Tallahassee area, and how many wants and warrants are still out for them.
Oh my God. I don't know about the warrants, but nothing would surprise me. My mother used to say things like, none of your daddy's family are currently in jail. She came from more respectable people. But the first one of us arrived, we think, in 1799. He was a French feller by the name of François Brouard, and he landed in what was then Spanish East Florida, because the King of Spain was giving the land away. He was just like, come on down. I'll give you many acres. And this guy thought, well, free land, man. That sounds good. And he later anglicized his name, even before Andrew Jackson and the 1821 takeover by the Americans, to Broward. And there are now about 6 million gazillion Browards all over Florida. And none of them are trying to drain the Everglades at this moment that I'm aware of.
So when people come to Tallahassee, what's the first thing you tell them? Do you warn them about the most phallic public building in the world, the state capitol, or what do you do?
Well, there are a lot of things I think people should see here in scenic, charming Tallahassee. I tell them to go out to where they can face the capitol, which we have always called rather cruelly Reuben's erection. It was approved by Governor Reuben Askew, who was a very decent Christian moral man, and he would not have appreciated that. But there you go. That's Tallahassee. And yes, it looks like it's a kind of visual representation of what we feel Florida government is in fact doing to us. That's maybe not the pretty part. I tell them to go look at the oak trees, which are everywhere, less everywhere than they used to be, because we have rampant, insane, out of control development, i.e. we're in Florida. One of the things I like to tell people about, because it's so bizarre, is that we have this incredibly well looked after stump in the downtown park. And the stump is cared for, and there's a plaque. And many people say, with some reason, why are y'all keeping that stump? And it's because it belonged to a thing called the May Oak, under which May Queens were crowned for about 140 years. And a maypole was danced around, stuff which the plantation people got out of Sir Walter Scott's novels. And that's why it was, you know, we cherish it and we reverence it, and we don't even know why.
What happened to it? Why is it just a stump?
Well, because it was a very old tree. And in 1986, lightning struck it, but it had been diseased for some time. So the city had to cut it down. But then the Garden Club and the Junior League and the, for all I know, the United Daughters of the Confederacy said, we have to save it. May Queens. Under that tree, many May Queens were crowned. And Faye Dunaway almost was. She came in second in the 1958 May Queen pageant. Can you believe she came in second?
Wow.
She couldn't believe it either.
The book subtitle is 8 Generations of Swamp Lawyers, Conquistadors, Confederate Daughters, and Other Florida Wildlife. Now, all of those things aren't favorable. You know, when you look back at that family history, what do you make of some of the more unsavory aspects of it?
I suppose it is what it is. I've never felt personally guilty about it. I'm a bit appalled by some of it. We are not, I should say, my family are not, as best I can tell, related to a single conquistador. But it sounded good in the title, according to my editor. But the swamp lawyers, loads of those, and slaveholders, some of those. Some of my family were owners of, they never called it a plantation. They called it a large farm. I think they weren't as fancy as some people who called their places plantations. But, you know, that they owned any human beings was pretty atrocious. My great-grandfather, who's buried in Wakulla County, a Confederate veteran, actually great-great-grandfather. I get grandfathers all tangled. Great-great-grandfather, Richard Roberts, has absolutely no paper trail, no personal history, appears in no census until 1863 when he's drafted into the Confederate Army. God knows who that guy was. You know, I mean, he could have been anybody. He could have been called anything. But he shows up, and after the war, he ends up marrying a lady with some land, which was crafty of him. I mean, okay, it was swamp land, but, you know, the family's interesting because there are so many of them. I mean, some of them were bus drivers. Some of them were dirt farmers. Some of them were judges. Many, many of them were lawyers. My Granny Roberts, who took a dim view of everything. Granny was raised in one of those super strict Presbyterian homes where you didn't drink, you didn't dance, you just basically didn't. You didn't even say darn. If Granny caught you saying darn, she'd wash your mouth out with Dial soap. Granny was hardcore. But Granny said about a bunch of my cousins going to law school, she said, well, the Robertses sat in the swamp until law school was invented. Then they commenced a politicking. And, you know, I'm like, geez, Granny, you know. How about congratulations or something? But she took a dim view.
What is there about Tallahassee that keeps you there? You could live anywhere. You spend at least part of your year in England. So why do you stay in Tallahassee?
Oh, you know, that's a weird question, and I struggle with it myself. But I love this place, and it is mine. I mean, I was born here. I was born on a piece of land that I now own, and there was a house on it. Let me make that clear. It wasn't, you know, out on the grass.
Not just a stump.
Not just a stump. Yes. It is beautiful. Yeah, it's in a pecan grove. My parents built this house, and it is a weird house, and I love that. But I like that Tallahassee is strange. It is very strange. It is a home for great eccentric people. I mean, George Clinton lives outside of town here. The great, no relation to the president as far as I know, but, you know, the master of the funk. If that guy lives in the vicinity, you know, who could argue? Though people have, I don't know, some people love it here, and my students from South Florida are like, oh, my God, there's nothing to do. Oh, my God, there are no clubs. And I just say things like, tough, go for a walk at St. Mark's Wildlife Refuge. It'll be good for you. And they give me strange looks. But I like that this is a place with two universities. It has so many smart people. It has writers. It has artists. And on the downside, it has the Florida legislature, a very, very downside. You know, we feel occupied every year. They invade us in their gigantic cars and their fancy trucks and their ridiculous bad manners.
When's the best time for people to come visit? Is it in the spring when there's Word of South Festival and things like that going on?
Well, I'd say February, March, April. Mm-hmm. It's usually not 100 degrees and 145% humidity. It's usually very pleasant. The flowers aren't all dead from the heat. I like February the best because it's still cool and it's now when the azaleas bloom. They used to bloom in March, but you know, we're watching climate change before our very eyes. I think that's the best time to come. But Word of South, of course, because distinguished writers such as a Mr. Craig Pittman, who I believe may be known to you, appears occasionally, and many other writers, very fine writers from all over the country and sometimes all over the world, plus music, plus cool stuff. You know, we had women in jazz this past year. Florida has a lot of music, but Tallahassee has a jazz tradition, i.e. Cannonball Adderley, Scotty Barnhart, Marcus Roberts, that just can't be beaten. And we are very proud of that. And we have it in a lovely park downtown, which used to be a brownfield site. Before it was a brownfield site, it was a baseball stadium. And when they finally cleaned up the toxic waste, they thought, let's turn this back into a park. It once sort of was a park. It had a waterfall. But as was the way with early American settlers, they blew it up. Because, you know, blow it up. That's the plan. When the original guys who were in the somewhat mythicized story, one guy from Pensacola, one guy from St. Augustine, marching toward each other, rather miraculously finding each other, which means this story's not quite accurate. But one of them wrote about how it looked. The veil was so beautiful and the waterfall, it looked like fairyland. So they blew it up. This makes perfect Florida sense to me. Oh, look, that's nice. Let's destroy it. It now has a lovely water feature instead of a waterfall, but it's also a very crafty stormwater runoff place which we need. We need. It rains a lot.
You mentioned that you love Florida, and I do myself, but the more Florida changes, the more my love for it changes. It began as a pure love. Now it trends more towards love-hate. How has your love for Tallahassee changed in the decades now that you've spent there?
Well, it's always been kind of love-hate because I've always thought, this is an amazing place. We will probably ruin it. And we're now in the process of ruining it. Mm-hmm. We are widening roads. We are allowing developers to clear cut and then going, oh, you shouldn't do that. And they get some little tiny fine, which, you know, doesn't stop them and doesn't bring the trees back. We have a development here, which is on some beautiful land, formerly beautiful land, out in Eastern County, and the name of the development is Canopy. There is no canopy in Canopy. I mean, all the trees are gone. Yeah, whatever it's named after is whatever we ran off or killed or cut down to build the damn thing. We have lots of possibilities for urban fill, but we don't take advantage of them because apparently it is your God-given right to have some little ugly, stupid yard with no trees in it for your ugly house. You know, we tear down old things, which really annoys me. And we have to struggle, like everyone in Florida, with our state government, which seems to have gone completely barking mad. So my love for Florida and my love for Tallahassee is qualified by these things. And I have to get out a couple times a year minimum to sort of reset my head, because you know I'm a kind of angry person anyway. I get up in the morning and go, God dang it, you know, when I listen to the news, and I don't mind being angry. Other people seem to, but I don't. And it's good to go be mad at another government for a little bit.
I want to ask, you know, you travel a great bit. Craig mentions the time you spend in England. I in my life, am also a travel writer. I travel probably twice a month, mostly domestically. And I want to ask if you've experienced the same thing I have, because when you go places, you meet people. Oh, where are you from? I'm from Florida. Of course, everyone has a context for Florida beaches, South Beach, Disney, theme parks, that sort of thing. And used to be, people thought that was kind of cute. Oh man, Florida, orange juice and sunshine. Now there's absolute revulsion. And I want to, you know, when I tell people I'm from Florida, I get, you know, the nose crunches. Why do you live in Florida? Is it really that bad? And they talk about book bans and terrorizing LGBTQ kids and a autocratic governor. The reality of that, I like a lot less than the reaction I get from other people about that. You know, the reaction, you know, whatever that. But is that what you experience as well now, telling people you're from Florida when you leave the state?
Sometimes. I think it all started to go south in the 2000 presidential election disaster, where people started to look askance, because it used to be, oh, paradise, sunny all the time, warm all the time. And I'm like, not where I live. Mm-hmm. Oh, where I live. Not sunny, rains all the time. Because I was trying to discourage people from ever coming here. You know, we got enough people. Y'all do not come here. But yeah, during everybody that I knew in Europe learned to spell Tallahassee in the year 2000. They just couldn't believe there was such a place. And they also couldn't believe how you spelled it. But yeah, I get the side eye and the, oh my God, and the, are you okay? I like that. I like, are you okay? And if I say quickly enough, I'm also a journalist, then they get it. They don't go, get out of there, get out of there. Then they say, oh, I can see why you hang around that place. But yeah, we are not doing ourselves any good. And I don't think this means people will stop coming. There's no evidence of that, because everybody wants a beach. Sometimes everybody wants to take their kid to Disney, unless it's turned into a prison, which, you know, the governor.
Well, I think a lot of the people that are coming here to live with are all on board with book bans and terrorizing LGBTQ kids.
Yeah, I lived in Alabama for 14 years, and it now looks like a paradise of liberalism compared to this. I mean, Alabama, hello. In fact, all my Alabama friends are worried about me, and that's a hell of a note. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I kind of feel like it's the job of a lot of us, and I include you in this, Craig, definitely, to stick around and fight this stuff. And how some of us fight it is to write about it and ridicule it. Now, the powers that be do not care what we say. You know, we are part of that. We're called the corporate media, the legacy media, the mainstream media, whatever we're called, you know, the ones that are interested in facts and kind of prefer to base our whatever we do on facts. You know, they're so filled with contempt for us. There is no shaming these people. We used to be able to shame a Florida politician. Those were good days. I mean, Democrats and Republicans, you could shame them. I think we're now shame-free. And people move to Florida so that they never have to think again. You know, they don't have to think about education. They don't have to think about taxes, because ours are ridiculous. And Craig, as you explained at Word of South, they don't think about our economy, because as long as people keep moving here, the Ponzi scheme keeps working. Now, when... this is not if, this is a when. A third of South Florida is underwater and Key West is inundated. All the keys are gone. In my lifetime, and I'm not 1,000 years old, but in my lifetime, I have watched barrier islands and little peninsulas. We got one up here called Alligator Point. I watched them disappear. Just disappear. You know, as if we can just pretend, because we don't want to think here in Florida, that climate change isn't happening. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad I live on a hill in Tallahassee. You know, I'll be okay for longer than most people.
Soon to be waterfront property. Because you wrote a book about this called Tribal, I have to ask you, what's it like in Tallahassee on game day for FSU?
Oh, Lord. What you do is don't go out of the house at certain times, unless you go in the ball game, which I have yet to figure out why people aren't going to the ball game. I guess I've heard that Publix is really nice during a football game.
Very quiet in there. Yeah.
It's magical in a sick sort of way, because they're one-way streets that suddenly run the other way. Everybody is friendly, which is a euphemism for drunk. And it's very, very noisy near campus. And you sort of 3 hours each side, well, let's say 3 hours around the beginning of the game, 3 hours around the end of the game, just don't go driving. Just don't do it. You won't get anywhere. And it is a wonderful exhibition of the strangest obsession, which I share, and which is investing your emotional well-being in a bunch of 19 and 20-year-old boys. This is an odd thing for a human to do. I can only assume that it's imprinted in my head, because I've been going to FSU home games since I was 9 years old. Mm. My father died. You could inherit season tickets back in the day. And my mother needed a date to the FSU Florida game. So I was it. And it was the most wonderful thing I'd ever seen. So I have an inner barbarian, which I just have had to make peace with. I really have. I have tried to stop caring, and I can't stop caring.
My brother went to Florida State. He was there during the dynasty years from 93 to 96, never lost a home game while he was in school. I was at the 31-31 tie.
Well, me too.
And that was 25 years of my life that were incredibly important until I realized it had become a toxic relationship, and I shut it off right now. I have not watched a game in years after it
you
having
went cold
been.
Null? Ooh, you went cold yeah. null. That's
cold
great.
Cold college football, everything. Yeah. I went to Auburn personally, but I always liked Florida State football better. And it has made my life wonderful in many ways, not least of which I'm no longer chained to the television for 12 hours a day on Saturdays in the fall. I never thought I would get over that addiction. I stopped it instantaneously, and my life is much the better for it. But hey, I always tell people, people who are nuts about whatever they're nuts for, never apologize for what you put value in. Never apologize for what you're passionate about.
Chad, I admire you. I have tried. I am clearly weaker than I should be. And I do occasionally think of all those Saturdays I get. I could have probably written a bunch more books if I had my Saturdays. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Those weekends are so long in the fall when you aren't into football.
Well, and I will watch football all day on a Saturday. I will do it. I cannot seem to help myself. Maybe it's my recreation. I don't know. I tell myself all kinds of stupid things about it. And I can tell you every single thing that's wrong with college football. I mean, it is hideously violent. It is destructive to the body, chronic brain disease, wrecked knees, wrecked backs, destroyed necks. Young men led to believe things that aren't true about their futures, how they're all going to become rich pro players when only 2% get to the pros. It's an abomination. And yet there I am. Mm-hmm. So I think the word for that is hypocrite. And I embrace my hypocrisy. Yeah. I admire those that can kick the habit.
Yeah, yeah. And you certainly are aware of this more than most. Anyone listening, if you really want to confuse someone from overseas, try and explain college athletics to them. There is no comp around the rest of the world for college athletics. It just doesn't exist. If you try to talk to them about college football or March Madness, they literally cannot comprehend it, because nothing like that exists in the rest of the world.
No, the closest that I ever saw where I went to university, the big, big, big sporting event is the boat race between Oxford and Cambridge. And the boat race, which is very fraught, but I mean, it's a boat race, so it doesn't last very long. And you go out on a rainy March Saturday and stand on a bridge in London, and they row under quite quickly, amazingly quickly, and somebody wins, and whoever wins is happy, and whoever loses sulks for a little bit, and everybody goes to the pub. That is it. There's no money involved at that point. I have a hard time explaining that America is the only country that monetizes college sport. I mean, the last I looked at this, it was about $3.5 billion business a year. I'll bet it's more than that now.
Yeah.
It's extraordinary, the money. And because of the money, it is going to be very hard to get rid of. We'll not get rid of it until the mothers of America, and some of the fathers too, say, no, my kid ain't playing that sport. I want my kid's brain to stay intact.
You mentioned, you know, the university, obviously Florida State and Florida A&M University. I live on Amelia Island, which is a retirement, you know, community largely. What a wonderful asset it is to have young people in the city. I was in Chicago recently, and so many of the college students from the Midwest take their first job in Chicago. And it was noticeable to me to see that many young people when where I live, you know, I'm nearly 50 and I am decidedly the youngest person in a lot of spaces I am in.
Well, you know, I love being around the students. We have really good students. This is another thing that will keep me in Florida. These kids, some of them say, I'm getting out of here and I'm never coming back, especially if it's, say, a gay kid or, you know, a kid that's just not having this crap, just not having it. But a lot of them say, oh, no, I'm not letting them have it. And they are so smart and engaged, and you don't have to convince them of anything about, say, the climate crisis. They know. You don't have to convince them to be tolerant. My particular class this year, which I'm doing Southern Literature and Culture, they all know. They've read about what we're not supposed to be teaching. Therefore, they ask me about it. And then we talk that. And we read about it. And my attitude toward that crap is like to Governor DeSantis and his educational hench idiots. Come on. Come get Professor Roberts, because she's, I guess, technically breaking the law. Now, I'm not important enough for them to really get mad at, but, you know, the students think this is the stupidest thing they have ever heard. No one's ever told them, they tell me, these kids, that they shouldn't read something or they shouldn't know a certain kind of person. Or they shouldn't. I mean, these kids are like drag queens. Especially kids from Miami and Orlando. They're like, when was the last time a drag queen shot up a school? They just think it's absurd. Mm-hmm. And so many of them want to fix Florida, which is an admirable thing, a really admirable thing.
Yeah.
Not to cast aspersions on these fine young people, but isn't it true that some young people back in the 70s at FSU actually started the streaking fad there in Tallahassee?
I fear they did. FSU in the 70s was called, rightly or wrongly, the Berkeley of the South. There was nakedness going on. And there was streaking at football games. Of course, you had to watch something at the football game because FSU was so bad in the 70s. I mean, I sat through the 0-11 season. Man, that was but then there was streaking. And I don't quite know why people wanted to do that. It was mostly boys, but they did do that. And it was all part of the letting your freak flag fly around here, which there were many freak flags. And some are still flying, I'm happy to say. And it's a joy to see. That's another thing about university towns. You get all kinds of people. You get people from all over the world. And the people from all over the world add so much to our understanding of everything.
Yeah.
I mean, they expand our minds. So, you know, if you want to be closed-minded, a university town's a bad place to be.
Well, and to that point, again, when my brother got to Florida State in 1993, his dorm room, you know, he and his roommate share a bathroom with, you know, another one. He's from Wisconsin. His roommate was from Boston. There was another kid from Florida and one from California. You know, so that shows, you know, that and at that time, you know, Florida State was kind of like one of the it schools to go to from across. That was before the cost of secondary education went inflated through the roof. And, you know, without any scholarship or anything, you could go to Florida State or go out of state from Wisconsin. And it wasn't all that expensive. Burt Reynolds, we know, went to Florida State. Jim Morrison, too, right, for a period?
Jim Morrison briefly, and alas, the house he supposedly lived in is gone now.
Oh, yeah.
And Burt Reynolds, bless his heart, he went to Florida State and gave a lot of money, not just to the athletic programs, but to the theater programs, too. To his everlasting credit, he was kind of a fun human. You know, and we've got all kinds of interesting people that come out of Florida State. And then we have a number of politicians who shall remain nameless because they get too much attention anyway. Florida State is a really great university. I hope it stays a great university. But a university that tries to tell people what to teach and how to think will not remain a great university. You can imagine how they feel at Florida A&M when, you know, they're not supposed to talk about diversity and they're not supposed to talk about systemic racism. And Florida A&M is kind of like, what?
That's a daily thing.
Yeah. Try being us.
Yeah. For anyone who doesn't know, Florida A&M is a historically Black college.
Mm-hmm. With also very distinguished alumni and the best band on the face of the earth, the Marching 100.
Yes.
They get invited to march all over the world, and people's minds are blown in the best way, the best way. They played with Prince at the Super Bowl. Mic drop.
As an eighth generation Floridian, what message would you give to the 900, 1,000 Floridians who will stake up residence here today, new to the state?
Stop. Go away. I know that's ungracious.
Seriously, though? I mean, seriously?
No, seriously. Seriously, what I would say is you're coming to a place that is fragile and beautiful and special. You want to come here because it's warm and there are flowers and there's beautiful water, and your presence here can, not necessarily will, but can destroy those things. So be aware of it, in harmony with the environment, not in opposition to it. You know, the wetlands protect you from storm surges and purify your water. The mangroves do the same. Don't pull them out. Live in a sustainable way. Quit dumping Miracle-Gro on your lawn. Just quit that crap because you're poisoning your own water. Florida is a little teeny crust of soil, most of it on a crust of limestone, karst plain with holes in it. And the holes take us down to the water that we drink. Our waters are getting filthier and filthier, and that green gunk that's floating in your pond will kill your dog if he gets in there. That is toxic algae. We are creating this. We are creating the instrument of our own destruction. So if you insist on living here, you know, when you first get here, think. I know it's hard, but think. Think about how to live in harmony with the land. I'd still prefer, if I were Lord of Florida, I would say, okay, we're full. Again, I'm a hypocrite. Remember, I'm a hypocrite. Just because my people got here early, that's conveys no virtue on them or me. But I think, yeah, okay, we got enough humans. We're stressing ourselves to death. We really are. But either lucky for everybody or not, I don't know, probably lucky for everybody. I'm not in charge.
Diane Roberts, the book is Dream State, Eight Generations of Swamp Lawyers, Conquistadors, Confederate Daughters, and Other Wildlife. Find her on Twitter at Bad Debutante. Thank you so much for the time today.
Thank you. Y'all are very kind. And this is a great, great podcast.
Diane's comments to new residents. It reminds me, but someone on the podcast says, you know, people live all their life to come to Florida and then they get here and want to change it.
And they want to make it like where they came from.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, there are so many little tidbits. I would start, you know, with don't buy a new house. You know, there are plenty of existing construction houses. The, you know, the, when we talk about development, one of the big problems we have is new homes, new neighborhoods, mm-hmm. buy a house someone already lived in. You don't need a brand new house, but you know, some people, that's a real marker of success, and they want the new construction. But you know, anyways, that's you know, I enjoyed Diane's perspective as someone, you know, obviously I barely go back 8 years, let alone eight generations. But, you know, it's interesting listening to her about what you do when you live in a place that you love that is blowing up around you in a lot of ways.
Yeah. The thing about Florida is we've long had this, or we've long enjoyed this sort of live and let live vibe, you know. Yeah, we know we have a lot of weird people here, and we, you know, we just let them be weird, let them be mm-hmm. as strange as they want to be, and you know, don't try and shut them down or impose things on them that they, you know, that makes it hard to live here. And we're not doing that anymore.
Yeah, don't try to category what weird is, because how you define weird and how I define weird are two totally different things. I think Ron DeSantis is very weird in the way that he wears white rubber boots up around his pressed dark blue pants to cosplay working person, and how he has no ability to talk to people and form, you know, interpersonal relationships. He views someone as weird who doesn't have sex the way he does, or doesn't like to read the books the way he does, or doesn't consider history the way he does. Yeah, where we get into trouble is when people want to define weird and then say, you know, and then outlaw it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And welcome to Florida.
Yeah, welcome to Florida.